Hey, serious privacy enthusiasts. Ready to ace your AI data privacy game?
Oh, you bet, Kay. Dive into the world of TrustArc's Nemity Research, your go-to for staying on top of regulatory developments in AI and privacy.
Seriously, Nemity Research maintains a massive privacy and regulatory database featuring expert guidance and analysis from legal and privacy pros.
So save time on privacy research, cut your compliance timeline, and reduce costs with Nemity Research.
Get your regulatory research and insights at your fingertips with a free trial.
So get ahead in privacy compliance and start that free trial today. Go to trustarc.com/nimity-free-trial.
You're listening to Serious Privacy by TrustArc. Please welcome our hosts, Paul Breitbarth and Kay Royal.
Chief Privacy Officer, Data Protection Officer, Chief Data Officer, Privacy Engineer, GDPR Expert, CCPA Consultant, Data Privacy Counsel, Privacy Risk Officer. And that is just to get started. Do a vacancy search with the word privacy on LinkedIn, and you will soon be shown a huge variety of functions around the world for new and seasoned privacy professionals. And it seems the privacy job market is booming. Our guest today is the founder and CEO of True Staffing Partners, a staffing company helping to fill vacancies in data privacy, e-discovery, and cybersecurity since 2010. By now, Jared Kosilia and his team have placed over 3,000 professionals in full-time and temporary positions. We speak to him about the booming privacy market, but also solicit some tips and tricks to find the perfect job in privacy. My name is Paul Breitbarth.
And I'm Kay Royal, and welcome to Serious Privacy. Today, we have the pleasure to bring to you Jared Kosilia of True Staffing Partners. Very excited to have him on here to talk about the career of privacy, which Paul and I have talked about before. And is of course, we're nerds and old nerds in privacy, but it's the hottest new field in and out of a true legal career that's on the market, period. I mean, I may not have statistics to support that, but Jared might. But Jared, before we get started and say hello, we have the unexpected question that we start with. Are you ready?
I am always ready and glad to be here.
What is your simplest pleasure?
Oh, gardening. And the pandemic has just been positive for that pleasure, if nothing else. I love putting bulbs in the ground. It's great to watch things grow, and perhaps an unintended metaphor for my management style, if you will.
Nice.
We'll hear more about that later.
Yes. Paul, what about you? You might resonate with that question.
No, gardening is not too much my thing, even though I do have a garden. No, for me, it's cooking. And we've also discussed that before, but
making ice cream.
Well, not just making ice cream, also making dinner, but being in the kitchen, cutting up vegetables and letting things chew for a whole day or marinating things, that gives me a lot of pleasure. And it is a really good way to wind down after whatever busy day you've had. If you're angry at somebody, then chopping an onion is always a good way out.
I love it. I actually just had that literally this morning in a book that I was reading where the character was angry, so she went down to bake and chop and cut things. It was a good way of working out anger. My simplest pleasure is watching a bird take a sand bath. Water bath is a close second, but I take real pleasure in just watching the simpler things on earth that God has given us to enjoy. It just makes me, slow down and smell the roses. I just take a lot of pleasure in watching the simplest things. Brings a big smile to
like
my face.
Like looking at a sunset in the sea.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So let's get started with the topic of the day. Paul, you generally have a great question to start out with, but I have to tell you, I'm very, very excited for today's episode. I loved it when True Staffing reached out. You know, we always solicit volunteers. I was like, yes, absolutely, because I believe either next week or the week after, we actually have a person new to privacy. He's an experienced attorney, been an attorney for 20 years, but he's moving into the privacy field. So he's going to come on the show and discuss what it's been like for him to try to move into privacy and what's the tips and things that he's gone by. So I'm really excited for this episode.
Well, I mean, I am too, also because I never expected to end up in privacy.
Who of us did?
No, and I mean, we've talked about that before as well in our first episode, I believe, in our pilot episode. But I believe that nowadays it's much easier for people to end up in privacy because they know that this is work that can be done.
Make a deliberate choice, right?
Exactly. But Jared, before we get to all of that, can you just introduce us to True Staffing Partners? Who are you? What are you doing? Why privacy and cybersecurity, and why already in 2010?
Absolutely. Well, I share everyone's passion for privacy, and I think that's part of the reason why our business has really moved in that direction so aggressively in the last, you know, 5-6 years. We've really been dedicated to the space. And I think that's prerequisite number one for anybody that is interested, is you really have to develop a passion for it. And there are so many people in the industry who have that passion. True Staffing Partners was founded in 2010, so we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary. It's a heck of a year to be turning 10.
But, congratulations. Yay! And the crowd goes wild.
It's been a great ride, and hopefully we have, you know, 10, 20, 30 more years ahead of us. I got into the legal technology vertical almost 20 years ago and started True really with a primary emphasis on e-discovery. And what I started seeing happen around 2011, 2012 was a substantial increase in demand for talent around security and privacy professionals. And just as was the case with e-discovery around the turn of the century, where there was high demand and low supply, that's a great vertical to be in. It creates opportunity to be a leader as a talent agent and representative of people's careers and do more than just find appropriate talent, but really guide and manage the human capital strategies of the clients that we represent and the careers that we represent. So we've become triple disciplined in e-discovery, privacy, and cybersecurity. And I would say that the data privacy piece has been an increasing focus, not only because the job demand is there, but because it's a really sticky, fun intersection of legal and technology. And, you know, people always say to me, yeah, but security, there's 3 million person gap in headcount and availability of talent. And while that might be true, you know, a lot of those people are very, very exclusively technical professionals. And
Right. Privacy
is more a truer intersection of legal and technology that, as it evolves, is developing more as a strategic partner with the business. And not less, but equally, a regulatory and compliance function that is required of the company. It's becoming a part of people's brand reputation strategy and not just the way they keep the government off their back. And for all of those reasons, it's a fascinating and exciting and lucrative time to be moving into the space or accelerating vertically in the space.
Now, are you a privacy person, Jared?
Well, you know, I'll answer that by saying, you know, I'm not certified by the IAPP.
And you don't have to be. You don't have to be to run a privacy staffing company, but just out of curiosity.
Well, we're all working on our CIPP here. We think that the act of studying that kind of material will obviously make us better at our jobs. I haven't passed the exam yet, but you know.
You will.
Our qualifications are, you know, we're talking to all the CPOs of the Fortune 1000 and all of the practice group partners and attorneys in the Am Law 200 and all of the key decision makers in the software and service provider consulting firm community. Well, I've tried. I'm trying more and more every day, trust me. And so, you know, we gather our intelligence from the people that we talk to and we represent, or the people that we talk to and don't represent, whether they're candidates or potential clients. And having this unique perspective on speaking to all the different stakeholders across all the different verticals has made me what I think is a privacy professional. I can certainly speak to what it takes to be a privacy professional and what the mindset of decision makers in the privacy profession are making.
So are you mainly focused on the United States, or is is your company working on a global level?
We are working on a global level, but the demand in the United States and the way the privacy industry is evolving in the United States is very different than the rest of the world, for better or for worse. Part of that is because we are so fractured in terms of the law here and the necessity for corporations to keep up with 50 different states and 50 different laws, plus all the different disparate global regulations, has, for lack of a better metaphor, created a lot of jobs. And in America, we are still considering privacy to be, and you know this, a consumer issue. And in the rest of the world, it's a human rights issue. And that creates a different environment for privacy professionals to maneuver within their organizations. So the kinds of requirements that we're seeing from our European clients are very different than the kinds of requirements that we're seeing from our US clients, particularly from the top down.
Can you elaborate a bit on that?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Coming from Europe, I'm of course very curious how that is different in job descriptions, for example.
Yeah. So, for example, the bulk of the opportunity we've seen over the last several years coming out of GDPR in Europe has been heavily focused on DPO. It's been largely a compliance function and hasn't necessarily seen the same volume of staffing at a strategic level that the US is going through right now. For example, in the US, we expected in 2020 for the middle market of privacy directors, managers, technologists, people running more of the programmatic operations and less of the strategy, people more involved in technology implementation, being the focus for corporate America. But then COVID happened and everything changed. And what we're seeing happen right now, since privacy has been thrust into the limelight again, and I think Cambridge Analytica was really the last big global event where privacy moved from a corporate to a social consciousness back to a corporate consciousness that actually affected the job market. And we're seeing that again right now with COVID and contact tracing and the mixing of healthcare data and employee data with potential consumer data, how we can use, not use that data, and companies taking a consumer-focused, opportunistic business opportunity perspective to leveraging privacy talent to help guide the strategy of the business when it comes to their data, or it comes to acquiring data, or it comes to monetizing data. And so in COVID America, we've seen a shift and people have stopped hiring middle market entry level privacy professionals for the most part, and are recalibrating their upper level CPO, deputy CPO ranks in order to accommodate for a new vision of leveraging privacy within the business.
And what do you see apart from the US and Europe, for example, Asia Pacific, is that also a region where you are staffing people, or is that still too much out of scope or still up and coming?
It's up and
or
coming.
South America. Right.
Yeah, South America is more likely to be a new hotbed for opportunity, and not just in South America, but supporting South America. We do get a lot of requests, specifically over the last several months, for Latin experience and for Canadian experience. And those markets are really, I think, maturing. And with the new laws and regulations coming out, are areas where companies are focused. Asia is still very up and coming. I don't know that despite whatever growth privacy industry has experienced there, it has really dynamically affected the job market enough for me to give you a trends report. And if I'm honest, we are just as a company not as focused in APAC as we are in all those other regions. But we are getting a lot of requests for experience specifically supporting Latin America.
Nice. Nice. And I'm going to shift you just a little bit because I have been all over your website. Of course, anytime you go and review anything around jobs, something with True Staffing will pop up. And people laugh. But the way that I monitor the privacy industry is by monitoring what open jobs are out there. And so I'm not constantly, but quite often will go to the various career sites, IAPP, and then Association of Corporate Counsel, and look to see what privacy jobs they have open. It gives you a really good feel for how fast and what's moving. For example, when the hospitality industry has a huge breach or a decision that is issued, you will see a lot more jobs come open for hospitality places hiring privacy officers or more privacy personnel. So it's a good way to gauge the industry. So I've been all over your website. I absolutely love what you're doing. But you just issued part one of your blog on the state of the e-discovery and data privacy job market pre and post COVID. Tell us a little bit about that. And by the way, as we always do, we will provide the links to the resources that we discuss. And if Jared wants to provide us other resources he wants us to share with us, we'll provide that in the description for the podcast as well. But tell us about the pre and post COVID job market for privacy. It was fascinating to read.
First of all, thank you for reading it, and thank you for browsing through our website. I know it is a wealth of original content. You know, I enjoy the attempt at being prolific and exposing to the community the things we're observing, because we really do sit in this really unique place and have a perspective that I think is completely original in terms of what's happening across the market. You know, look, I spoke to it a little bit, but I'll reinforce it shortly and then talk about a few other trends that we're seeing pre and post COVID. When it comes to privacy, there's a top-down restructuring. People are, as a result of all the conversation coming out of COVID, and particularly in the healthcare industry, and it might be worth noting that the healthcare industry is in this really unique moment in place and time where they have access to a wealth of data. They are very cognizant in the most aggressive US privacy law, which is HIPAA, and are looking and thinking creatively about how they reinvent and evolve in many ways to look and feel or have the opportunity to leverage data the way Silicon Valley and major tech companies have, obviously being very careful and sensitive to patient data. And people's risk profile and even just appetite profile for where they want to go with that possibility of data leverage is so radically different from company to company. There's really no consistency across even the healthcare vertical of how these different companies generally feel about taking certain levels of risk. It's all very different. And that's where the privacy professional is really being asked to step in and add value right now. Help me balance legal risk and business opportunity. And a lot of privacy professionals aren't there yet, right? And if I were to give advice to people as to where this industry is headed, regardless of COVID, and where to think about growing their skill set, you've got to think about privacy as not just a regulatory and compliance function of your organization. And look, this is advice for career-minded privacy professionals as much as it is the people that are hiring them or looking to leverage their own data within their business. The beautiful right. thing about privacy professionals is they understand the law and they know where the data is and how to find it and what they can and can't do with it. And being able to advise a board or being able to advise C-level executives on what those opportunities are is what is separating the people who are getting hired for high-end CPO jobs and the people that are inheriting programs that they then run. And what I hear a lot from CPOs, particularly post-COVID, many of whom are very aware of their value, is I'm a builder. I built this department here, this program here, and it's great, but now my job is mostly running it. And right. I want to build something again. So to the hiring managers out there, there is great opportunity to attract if you're looking to build. And look, rebuilding is building. Reconfiguring, right. recalibrating is building. And I think that a lot of people out there are hungry for those opportunities, despite it being what seems like a scary time to make a job move. And that's definitely something that wasn't the case a year ago today.
Right. And I like to politely call the build, I like the way that you call build it. I call it entrepreneurial personalities.
Sure. Sure. But you know, what's amazing is you can have that entrepreneurial personality and actually walk into a Fortune top 20 and have plenty of room to make an impact and build and grow a program and a group and have an overall impact on the business at large. There is still not a maturity level that is exceedingly peaked in the privacy world. Even the biggest, you know, companies like your Googles and your Amazons and your Microsofts, they're still maturing those models. And so,
oh, always, given the change in laws and the enforcements that come down and the different types of data models that are being used. And yes, with TrustArc, we actually work with a lot of those same clients. So it's absolutely wonderful.
The perfect privacy program only exists on paper. I mean, nobody has so far been successful in implementing and maintaining a privacy program that is compliant in every single jurisdiction around the world for every single day of the year. Indeed, if only because everything continuously changes, for example, by a court decision. Any changes in job descriptions you're already seeing since TREMS 2 3 weeks ago?
Well, you know, look, to finish the question of post-COVID, pre-COVID too, one of the other things that I think is worth noting and where law firms really come into play here, and this is certainly a trend that we've seen in the last several months, is as corporations are busy in the third quarter and for much of the second quarter retooling their chief privacy officers and top-down leadership, they've not been staffing up on the operations, technology, or even the in-house legal support side of things. It's still been pretty quiet. Even though there are lots of jobs posted, what we're seeing happening is a lot of interviewing, but not a lot of hiring just yet. We think that by the time we get to Q4, there's going to be a bell curve in actual trigger pulling of hiring happening. But right now, people are shopping around and shopping around very aggressively, just not necessarily hiring aggressively. So what does that do to outside counsel? It means that lots of corporations are leaning in to their outside counsel resources. And so we are starting to see demand rise up again from outside counsel for 3 to 5 year associates with privacy experience, not even necessarily with books of business, but who are very highly billable, understand how to plug into different industry verticals, understand the law, the policy, how to write it, but also have programmatic skills and sometimes even product development experience as outside counsel and advising on how clients develop products as it relates to privacy and leveraging privacy, not only from a compliance perspective, but from a consumer brand reputation perspective. We're seeing attorneys get involved in that work. And so there's going to be work for outside counsel. You know, look, I think outside counsel, just as a separate topic, is in some ways kind of hoping that there aren't large federal laws that get passed, because the bifurcation of the United States legal system when it comes to privacy has been wildly financially successful for the Am Law 200. And one of the reasons why we've moved so aggressively into privacy is because, unlike e-discovery, which in 2008, when the economy collapsed, went through this massive commoditization and pricing deceleration, privacy is nowhere near that. We're very far from a commoditized industry, so much so that I think right now, from a legal perspective, just keeping up with the different regulations and laws is keeping outside counsel very, very busy. But keep in mind, outside counsel is competing against the consulting firms for a lot of the programmatic business. And so what we've seen in the consulting firm side is corporations aren't hiring as much. Corporations aren't outsourcing as much to the consulting firms because they've chosen to lean in on their outside counsel. So outside counsel seems to be winning the battle right now of not losing business during COVID. And I think the consulting firms are, I don't want to say struggling, but holding the line rather than going through the kind of rapid growth that we've seen them go through in 2016, 2017, 2018 was an insane year for consulting firms hiring both full-time and contract resources for GDPR implementation. And we saw the same trend spike again in 2019 as it relates to CCPA. Right now, the consulting firms are quiet. I think they're holding on to the clients that they have and making sure they are very well serviced and looking to grow in 2021 from a headcount perspective.
So what are the qualities that you would be looking for when looking for a privacy candidate?
Well, it really depends on where in the ecosystem and where in their own individual career they're at.
Do they have to be a lawyer in your perspective?
Absolutely not. I think, you know, some companies have the reporting structure through the general counsel. Others have them through the CIO. You know, it really depends. I would say 50% of the people who we place in privacy jobs are lawyers. Does that mean that they're practicing in that role? Absolutely not necessarily. In fact, I just had a conversation this morning with someone who's a chief privacy officer who doesn't report to the general counsel. She reports to a chief innovation officer, actually, and she's a lawyer. She's not barred, but having that law degree does, I think, give some privacy professionals in some corporate cultures advantage over others who do not have it. And certainly that's the case on the job interview process, but it's very different from company to company. Some people see it as a value add. Some people see it as irrelevant. Some people see it as absolutely necessary. But keep in mind, there's also a divergence happening in the more mature privacy programs where you may have multiple people functioning together where they've compartmentalized certain things. For example, you may have a privacy lawyer who is responsible for all the DPAs and writing the policy and specifically, you know, policies around employee data. And then you may have a counterpart who's at the same level or tier, you know, a director level or a VP level within the organization, who is doing all the programmatic work, who built their GDPR CCPA program, who's handling all their DSAR request automation, who's handling their cookie program. And those two people may hold the same stature in the company and the same persuasive expectation from the stakeholders as to how the company is dealing with their privacy, just in different areas. And sometimes both of those people will be lawyers, and sometimes only one of them will be lawyers. But it is not a prerequisite to get into the industry. And I would say, particularly for people who are looking to move into privacy within their existing employers, even more likely that they're not a lawyer, because a lot of CPOs are tasked with creating programmatic solutions without the necessary headcount. And that's even before COVID. It's certainly been hyperbole post-COVID. But we have a very robust contract staffing augmentation business that provides ad hoc resources or even part-time resources, because a lot of CPOs can't get full-time headcount. And a lot of CPOs struggle to get dotted line resources where someone in IT will take 20% of their time and commit it to privacy, or somebody in marketing or human resources will take a portion of their job and move it to a privacy functionality. Other people run their whole program that way and rely on the part-time internal resources. So if you're working somewhere and you want to get into privacy and you're not a lawyer, great. You've got to speak up. I'll tell a quick story about a dear friend of mine who was an e-discovery professional who really wanted to transition into privacy. He was a litigation support project manager working on some of the biggest litigations in the country, huge Ponzi schemes, and you know, worked with a law firm and wanted to transition. And what were the steps he took? He went out and he got his IAPP certifications. He got CIPPE, he got CIPPUS, and then he started getting his CIPM so that he understood the programmatic aspects. He volunteered in late 2017 to be part of the board for the GDPR task force. He was able to get on that board and was a participant with a portion of his time on helping them create the program. And then he was incredibly well read. You know, he listened to podcasts like this. He was out there reading, like a company just came out with a report today about how privacy is being affected in retail and e-commerce. Fascinating. I think it was Data Guys. And, you know, he was always one of those people that would bring things to me, you know, before I had read them, because he had a real intellectual curiosity and he fed that curiosity through research. And all of that spells passion. All of that spells discipline. All of that spells self-initiative. And when you start looking at privacy hiring managers who are getting to the point where they're accepting, they may not be able to hire an all-in-one privacy candidate that has all the skills that they're looking for day one and will hit the ground running. They may be looking for somebody who demonstrates characteristics that are outside of skill sets that are necessary to do the job, and rather the kind of things that point to a worthy employment investment. And when you add all that up, you know, this person now works for a major telecom company and, you know, was involved in, you know, doing all their privacy compliance work as it relates to, you know, one of their new offerings that's being released on streaming, and, you know, really exciting stuff, happier than he's ever been, definitely working hard, but proof that a little bit of patience and the right calculation of investment of your time to professionally develop can help you pivot into this industry. It is not impossible, especially if you're already in some other facet of legal technology.
what would you say? I love the focus on the business skills or the technical skills and the legal knowledge. What would you say is some of the personality aspects that fit well into privacy? I've written articles on this for years about how to move into privacy, whether or not you're a good fit for privacy. What do you believe are good personality aspects that make someone a good fit to move into the privacy as a career field?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the first thing that immediately comes to mind is you have to be persuasive.
I like it.
If you're not persuasive, you're never going to win trust. And so trust, I mean, true. You know, look, we both named our companies what we did for a reason. TRUST are the first five letters of my company when you look at it. Here we are with TrustArk. So, you know, clearly there are certain words that become pillars that a C-level executive or a board member executive understands about what privacy and privacy professionals' value is to the company. And the first one is trust. The second one is transparency. And so if you don't hold those core values of, I believe in transparency, I ethical center, I think is also something that high-end stakeholders look for in privacy professionals. Is this somebody who I think is going to advise me ethically or err on the side of being ethical and making me aware of ethical obligations? I think that's a huge component, particularly if the resource is sitting in the GC's office and holding a legal function, obviously. But even those that aren't, I think that's an expectation, right? I think people are aware at a decision-making capacity
right.
that how they handle their data will determine whether or not their customers trust them. And if you understand those kind of core topics, I think then you can start getting into the next layer of the onion. and the next layer of the onion is, you know, you got to be a voracious reader. You've got to love to read and love to ingest information. There's so much information coming out about privacy, and being somebody that can ingest and regurgitate that information to others is really important, because not everyone in the business is going to have that same interest or time to make sure they're staying on top of what's what and what the latest is.
You know, I love that, because there's always the question, you know, people ask in groups, what have you read lately? And, or, you know, what's an unusual thing about you that people don't know? I don't read nonfiction for fun. I avoid it completely, because really? I read thousands of pages of nonfiction for the job.
Yeah.
So for fun, I read vampire, werewolf, dragon, sorcerer books. I mean,
I love it.
No thought required. They're to me adult comic books, you know, without pictures, because I don't have to think about it. 2 hours, I could read a novel. My brain's not engaged. I love it. But you're right. You have to read. And one of the things Paul and I have talked about before is that as a privacy professional, if you're not active in the field of privacy, if you're not speaking, if you're not writing, if you're not on a working group or task force or highly engaged, you will fall behind very, very quickly, because that's how fast it moves. And it surprises me the companies that say that they want privacy people, but they don't want their privacy people to be engaged in professional associations or professional activities, which to me says, okay, I want to put you in a dark room and I don't want you to learn anything new.
Well, now you've spoken
true, to... But let me, at the same time, if you do all of those things, you still fall behind, because there is so much going on at the moment, you can never keep up.
Well, there one person can't know it all.
No, there was a time when privacy was a very manageable topic to be involved with. That's not even 10 years ago. But nowadays, it's impossible to understand all the laws that are going on around the world, all the legal discussions, and then all the current developments that get there on a daily basis. I mean, just looking at our own database of updates, and we are selective in what we publish, it's impossible to read it all.
Yeah.
We started, I think, this call with a joke that perfection is elusive, but we all pursue it. And the same is true of knowledge in the privacy space. I mean, for example, like we take the approach, because we're so niche in this discipline at True Staffing Partners, that our goal is to know everyone in the privacy space. This goal is impossible. This goal can never be achieved. But we're going to constantly pursue it like it can be, because that's what we do. And our our value is that we know everybody. And so it's the same thing with the knowledge. Like, you can't, but you got to try. And I think, you know, you'd be amazed that you just do a little bit at how far it can take you in a conversation with a privacy professional that will help you establish some credibility, especially if you're new to the industry and you don't have the experience to be credible. You can at least have the well-readiness to be credible, or at least engaging in a way that will indoctrinate trust and transparency and credibility and all these things that, you know, make you part of this community, which is where I wanted to make my second point, and you kind of beat me to it. Community. It's
right.
This is a really important aspect of being a privacy professional. Mm-hmm. And it's inclusive of leaders, right, who need to know what their peers are doing, because their board wants to know what, you know, what your relationship is with your peers in the community and how do we measure up. I mean, that's just one very high level business aspect of it. But more importantly, and, you know, I was a theater director before I got into the staffing business. I worked on Broadway, and, you know, I made a few movies and was doing this, quite frankly, before I started True Staffing Partners, to fund my artistry. And at a certain point, there became this personal moment for me where I realized that the legal technology community, and specifically the e-discovery and the privacy community, were so warm, were so welcoming. We're so open-minded to, you know, at the time I was in my 30s, a 30-year-old giving them advice and then them taking that advice
right
on how to build mm-hmm. their human capital for, you know, a Fortune 100 company or an Am Law 200 company, a law firm. And that was really rewarding to me. And I'll be very honest with you, I did not have that experience in the art world. And it was a big struggle, right?
But I love that point, because my first thought is, well, then of course you're a natural at managing divas.
But you know, this community doesn't have a lot of them. You know, that's what's so great about privacy. This is a...
not sure I agree there.
Comparatively, I assure you, compared to dealing with actors and directors all day long, this is a community that wants to expand. It's a community that wants to welcome people into it in order to evangelize the profession itself. And that's a really beautiful thing. I mean, I've had people take calls from me that, you know, I'm like this call. I mean, you guys don't know me or my company. And there's just a culture of community that should entice people to this profession. And also is really a requirement of the profession. People want to know you're connected. If you're looking to move up in the privacy world and you're disconnected from the community, I think you're going to be really challenged.
Oh, no, that's true. Because
I agree.
There's a lot of fields that it's about the people you know, but this has been such a small field that exploded really, really quickly that it's a small field. We all know each other. And even though it's growing, it really is about who you know and who you're connected to. Not that that's...
And it's like a family reunion every time you go
exactly.
to any of the big conferences, whether it's IAPP or another conference. But as soon as you get there, it's meeting old friends who probably have moved on to new roles by then. I was on a call last night with about 25 other privacy professionals from around the world. You may guess the topic. But we all had similar role. Well, we all had roles in privacy 5 years ago when Safe Harbor was annulled, and all had conversations at the time about what to do next. This was again a call, what to do next, with the same people in the same scenario, but everybody was in different roles.
Right.
And that's people stay in the family. They take up a new position somewhere else, in another company, in another country. But once privacy has grasped you, it's very hard to let go.
Well, and it's really good to know that you have those resources to reach out to. So building that camaraderie, even if you don't meet in person, there's a lot of people I know by names that, you know, we communicate on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. We reach out to each other for advice. I don't know the person. I probably never met them in person, but I know the name and I know what they do. But it's also nice to know that those contacts will always be there for you. Networking really is a thing when it comes to privacy. And I also like to educate new professionals on what networking actually is, because many of them think it's about what they can get out of it. No, it's about what you can do for the other person. And it's contributing.
Absolutely.
It is. And it's wonderful to know that even people, let's say they're retiring from government service where maybe they've been involved in privacy and now they're moving into practice, they don't have 20 years of experience in private practice managing privacy. They have 20 years of experience on the government side enforcing it. And it is an incredibly different beast on the other side of the fence.
Oh, yes, I can confess that's true.
True confessions. It's not true staffing. It's true confessions. Jared Mitz led us from the beginning into a feeling of complacency so we divulge our deepest and darkest secrets.
I have a way of making everyone feel very comfortable.
And that's probably why you're very successful at what you do. So, but I will say we are coming close to the end of our time, and we usually have one or two things we close with. One being, is there anything that as you were coming on the show, you wanted to make sure you absolutely could share and need that opportunity to do so? Or sometimes Paul has a burning question that he likes to close with.
Well, they may overlap because what I'm looking for is, of course, the tips and tricks to find the perfect job in privacy.
Love it. Jared?
Well, I mean, having the right agent is probably your shortest pathway to success. But,
so I'll just send you my resume and you'll take care of the rest.
Agreed. Aside from that, I mean, look, you know, I say it kind of jokingly, but, you know, even if you're not being represented by our organization, I think keeping your finger on the pulse of what's happening and looking for opportunities to follow trends in the marketplace will make you a more successful job seeker, not in identifying the opportunity, but in identifying what you want out of your next career move. Whenever I talk to a new candidate, it's really the only question I ask at this point, right? What do you want? And you'd be amazed at how many people are stumped by that very simple question and don't really know. So part of what we do here is help people figure that out. And it goes both ways, right? You know, you asked me if there's anything I wanted to make sure people knew out there before we close today. The single most important thing I think that I would want people to know is, hiring managers, people are looking. There is a great misperception out there that because of the pandemic and because of the state of the economy right now, that it is the wrong time to go looking for talent. But that could not be further from the truth. There are lots of people who are open to opportunities right now. People recognize that this pandemic has put things in all businesses in a place of scrutiny and change that has created a very open-mindedness in the candidate pool. So hiring managers shouldn't be afraid to hire because they think that by waiting, they're going to get better candidates. It's actually not the case. Now's a very opportunistic time to look at talent. And from a talent perspective, I think you have to really do some soul searching as to what you want out of your next move. Because once you can identify that, I think you can start to focus on how to go about getting it. But until then, you know, it can be a very challenging job search trying to parse out which company is going to have the right culture or the right maturity model or the right impact opportunity, because those things are things that hiring managers do not put in a job description. And if you're out there just shopping for jobs online, it's going to be much harder to read between the lines without someone or some ability to see behind closed doors to answer questions like, who does this report into and what's the culture of the company and what's their current privacy posture and how do they feel about employee data versus consumer data and are they handling things differently programmatically? And, you know, these are things that are not advertised when you see people posting positions.
And it takes that insider knowledge. So thank you very much. I will say that by not being on video, we may have gotten better audio, but you totally missed my expressions at many of the things you said.
Well, hopefully they were like, you know, happy surprises and thumbs up or, you know.
Oh, yeah,
something
that's
along
exactly
those lines.
What they were. Right,
they certainly were. Absolutely. And to all our listeners who never see our faces when we record any of this, unless Kay posts a sneaky picture with consent of all the participants on LinkedIn, I just would like to say, if you like our series, please spread the word and subscribe in your favorite podcast application. And should you have any questions or suggestions, or if you would like to be a guest on the program, please reach out to us via seriousprivacy@trustark.com or via Twitter at podcastprivacy. You will find Kay on Twitter as Heart of Privacy and myself as EuroPolB. Thank you again for listening to Serious Privacy, and until our next episode, goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
That was Serious Privacy.
Hey listeners, looking to navigate the realm of responsible AI data privacy governance? Well, look no further.
Absolutely. TrustArc is paving the way, offering a complete approach to managing privacy risks in the world of AI.
TrustArc allows organizations to confidently use AI with personal or sensitive data, moving forward efficiently and cost-effectively.
And here's the kicker. Protect your company and data with TrustArc's privacy-driven compliance software.
Because their deep automation streamlines data privacy governance, cutting your time to compliance with automated data mapping, risk assessments, and regulatory reporting.
TrustArc's enhancements go way beyond that, helping organizations understand AI better and align cross-functionally on data governance, privacy, and security.
Plus, they provide guidance on privacy governance for AI and how to mitigate risks using frameworks like NIST AI, OECD AI, and the NIMACY Privacy Management Accountability Framework.
If you're aiming for compliance excellence, check out Privacy Central, seriously one of my best parts. It uses automation and privacy expertise to understand your requirements, build and manage your privacy program with ease.
Oh, I agree. Privacy Central is your go-to to measure your progress toward responsible AI data compliance.
Stay ahead with TrustArc's Privacy Central. Visit TrustArc.com now. Ask me and Paul if you have any questions.